Today.
Today.
At the edge of our hope.
At the end of our time.
We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other.
Today there is not a man or woman in here that shall stand alone.
Not today.
Today we face the monsters that are at our door and bring the fight to them. Today we are cancelling the apocalypse.
The single greatest talk radio host who has ever lived. Well, he might not be that great, but he's still pretty awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the listening pleasure of yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in, because this is, it's been a long time since I've actually done a long broadcast on American Freedom Radio, so this is, I don't know, it just feels right. You know what I'm saying? Now, there was a new track that I wanted to take here. The old track of the Vinny Eastwood Show was, "Hi, tell us who you are and what it is you do." And I was just thinking, what if we modify that just a little bit, just to tell us where you've gotten and how you got there? Because I was just thinking about this. Every single listener that's alive anyway has dreams, aspirations, and challenges, and pain, and suffering, and apathy, and indifference, and depression on occasion to certain things, stages in your life. And I find what helps, or at least what helps me, is you find somebody else who's actually already gotten past that part of their life, somebody who's already there, and just tell you how they got there. Now, depending on the situation of their life and what they were in, you might actually find some extraordinarily powerful similarities, and you too can use the same formulas and rules for life and get yourself where you really need to go. Because it's all about what you want to do with your life and about what you feel obligated to do for others. I feel that's basically how we live. We're social animals. We must do for others and we must do for ourselves. We don't have to take. We don't have to steal. We don't have to hurt and kill and destroy. We can protect and we can be guardians, both of ourselves, our own hearts, minds, and the people around us and the planet. This is what I'd like to do. But I'm not perfect at it. And none of us are. My very special guest today is Derek Gross. Wait, hold on a second. I've got the name wrong already. I'm just going to call him Truth Seeker, because he's a MC and a hip-hop artist. So welcome to the show, Truth Seeker.
Vinny Eastwood, thanks for having me back, brother. How are you?
Yeah, borderline and on fabulous is my standard response.
Awesome, man. Good to be here, and excited to build with you on this episode, man.
Well, let's talk about and get straight into it then. So let's follow the new protocol to give us a little background on where you are now and how you got there.
The last time I talked to you in interview format, I think it was in 2012, we did a show together years ago, and I was just starting out, coming out of the religious system. I did Christian hip-hop for some years, doing the gospel music and traveling as an evangelist to churches, preaching, telling my story, speaking to hundreds and thousands of young people. And my spiritual awakening happened and tend to evolve and get into some things that were not discussed by the church realm and stuff like that. So that stuff started coming out in my music. So that was about 2012 when I contacted you. I put out an album called Awaken the Fire, and been doing that ever since. So I've been talking about my spirituality, putting a little bit of everything in there that I've experienced, and going into some of the holy books, even some of the books that are taken out of the Bible, and some of those stories and things that are talked about, the Book of Enoch and stuff like that, putting that within my music and doing spiritual esoteric hip-hop and kind of made my own lane. It doesn't really flow with mainstream hip-hop. And then where I come from, the Christian area, they most of them don't want anything to do with it because it's so different. So been doing that since 2012. It's now 2018. I'm on my fourth release with this style of music. My new album comes out this Friday entitled Seer. So I've been writing and recording that the last year or so, and it's ready. I'm ready to put it out, so excited about that.
Sounds nice, Darren. And along this way, like since 2012, was this like 6+ years ago, nobody kind of goes through the exact same experiences when they're starting off to when they are where they are. But it's a similar experience whereby you overcome one challenge only to be confronted by another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the way you kind of set it up, man, is this understanding what you want to do with your life and how to make that possible. Like you said, there is, like, I think each person's path is different and unique, but there are things that we can learn from one another. I do my own podcast, I do my own show as well, and my channel got pulled a few years back, and then I see Vinny Eastwood doing similar things. His channel gets pulled, and so the internet's there. So for us to kind of create our own lane and do what we want to do and create it. And if there's a need for it, if there's a niche, if there's a market, it will organically flourish, and we can build that ourselves. But there's things that we can learn from. I learned from you what you do when your life work is deleted in an you know what I'm saying? Overnight, while you're asleep, you wake up and it's all gone. What do you do? Do you give up? Do you find another platform? And so we have people who are going through similar experiences, whether it's just something like that, you know what I'm saying? And so I believe in universal law. I believe that there are practices that have been foretold by the ancients of things that work for them, and they put these laws together. A lot of it I relate back to the Bible, even though I come out of the religious Christian realm. There's so much truth in there, especially when it comes to universal law and things. If you're studying syncretism, I know we're mutual friends with Santos Bonacci and a fan, you know what I'm saying, a fan of his work. Syncretism, of seeing how everything kind of meshes and molds together, like, no matter what religious standpoint or philosophical belief you come from, we're all saying the same thing but saying it differently. So I believe in universal law. I believe in seed time and harvest, sowing and reaping, and that consistency is key and hard work pays off. And so in and throughout that, there's been so many people come along and let us know freely, like, what's working for them. And if it's working for them, maybe it'll work for me. And there's some of these rules of the game. I kind of feel like we're playing the game. Most of us are just playing by default, and we don't know the rules. Once we understand the rules of engagement, then we can actually be effective in this game. The game called life, the game of universal law. And that's what I've been doing with my life. And I'm now doing full-time music and podcasting. This is a life that I created for myself, and through meditation, through spiritual practice, and then just working the keys and the goals and things like that that I knew was working for others. And yes, they work for me, and they can work for anybody. The same work ethic, consistency, it pays off. Hard work pays off.
Seems to be an idea whose time has come with the emergence of Jordan Peterson and the like, talking about, in particular, this day and age, men not having adequate role models and boys never really truly growing up. And it seems to be that the lack of positive role models and things like that in the current age might be causing it. But it's very interesting because you mentioned synchronicity, and you also mentioned going away from the church. Just before coming on the show, I thought about people attributing their strengths and things like that to Jesus Christ. Like, for example, Jesus got me to give up drinking and smoking. Now, are you by chance the only person who's ever given up drinking or smoking? No. So there's other people who've done it, right? Yeah. Now, did all of them have to use Jesus, or did some of them actually manage to accomplish it on their own? Well, some of them managed to accomplish it on their own. So that means that they believe in themselves. and they managed to accomplish something, you didn't believe in yourself. You had to believe in something else in order to accomplish something. Whereas what's interesting is there's just a prism, is that you were that potential, you were that strength, and you were merely, let's just say, your vision was refracted. You saw yourself in that figure, okay? Because that figure was you all along.
Yeah.
That's kind of the realization that I started to get to. And then a deeper realization dawned that if there is a good rule book out there, like let's say a lot of people think that the Bible or the Quran or whatever is a good rule book for life, and they can't be bothered making up all the rules themselves, experimenting and going, okay, let's try this, and oh, that doesn't work, all right. But they just want a rule book straight up. Okay, I've sussed it. I've sussed life. And if you need that, because you can't in some other way get that, no problem. Borrow the rules. But once you've borrowed them, just realize that those are yours now. You don't belong to anyone else. And that was the two different things that I thought about this, is one side of the coin attempts to share knowledge, real truth, in order to get you to become powerful in yourself. The other shares a little bit of truth and a little bit of power and knowledge to get you to continue to believe and serve them.
It comes from this crazy conundrum of understanding. So I teach these biblical principles and spiritual principles about how to go into meditation, how to go into the trance state, see the vision that you want for yourself, the person that you want to be, bring it out of the dream state, and how to manifest it into this world, power of spoken word, repetition, the universal laws, and these things that work, and it's all spiritual principles, like I said, from the Bible, Bhagavad Gita, all of these things. There's gurus. The beautiful thing is, like, a lot of people are coming to these same understandings even without having to mess with the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita. They go into meditation, and there's a similar understanding that comes forth from that, and we teach that, and it works for me. It works for so many people that I talk to, I'm friends with. But what about the successful people who has built the life that they want for themselves, and they have no idea about anything spiritual? Like, they still have formed this life that they want for themselves, and they've done it. Those spiritual rules still apply. Like, the places that they're going in their psyche, whether it's hard work and determination pays off, we get to this place by taking different paths. But a lot of us are coming to the same conclusions. There's a very interesting dialogue, though, to wonder if it's just placebo, you know what I'm saying, or is it the Bible? Like you're saying, it's like Jesus represents a higher aspect of themselves, the good version of them that would send love to themselves because they've never felt love. They never loved themselves because they've been talked down upon, downtrodden, never had anything, so they've never experienced love. Jesus represents love from God being shown back to them, and it's empowering, and it will, and they can embrace that and build upon that. The same love that this Jesus figure has given them, a father figure can give. You know what I'm saying? And they are coming to a similar place in their life, in their career, and they've gotten there by taking similar paths, but on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I was. I remember speaking to high-level Freemason Frederick X about this, and he was giving a presentation at a very heavily Christian audience in Texas one time, and he was asked by an audience member whether he believed in the power of Jesus Christ and the church and so on and so forth, in terms of waking up to the truth, etc. And he said, well, there are actually, I think, many different paths up the side of the mountaintop, right? And I thought to myself, yeah, that's actually quite an interesting thing, because a lot of great realizations that I've had in my life, I'll be talking to somebody and they'll say, oh, well, that's actually like this guy's principle who came up with that idea 200 years ago, right? So that whole saying that great minds think alike, I think it's because great minds recognize truth.
Yeah. universal truth, universal law. If it works for one person, it's going to work for everyone. We get into the Messiah complex when people feel like they have the corner on that market, like it's only their truth or this is the only way. I deal with that a lot because I still have a religious following. There's people who recognize some of the biblical language that I still put in my music and talk about everything from aliens to angels and seraphim and things like that. And I use biblical phrases and terms and stuff, but then I'll use New Age terms or just spiritual terms or whatever. And so those people are there, and the religious schism is there too. So when people disagree with you, when their eternity is based upon it, they've given their life to follow these teachings and stuff, and you are a threat or challenge that by free thinking, or hey, I'm saying the same thing you are, only different, and they've been told that they have the exclusive corner on the market, it brings about problems. And so I've been dealing with that since day one, and I continue to actually deal with that from the Christian conservative following. But it's very interesting, the fight or flight mechanism that happens with people. And you could be saying the same thing. I've done interviews and stuff where I will teach biblical doctrine, but I won't use that terminology and phrasing at all. I just break it down in layman's terms, say the same thing that Jesus or the Apostle Paul is talking about, some of the beautiful principles in there, and I won't quote a scripture, and they'll get mad. Why'd you have to say it like that? Why couldn't you just have quoted a scripture? It's like, look, this is the same spirit and essence behind it, and I'm sharing it with an audience who would never step a foot in a church building. You know what I'm saying? So it's really
sometimes
weird how...
I find if you can't put something into your own words, it means that you don't truly understand it yet.
Yeah. I watched a video a while ago, well, a little earlier, of this young kid. I think he was 11, maybe even younger than that. But he wanted to disprove Stephen Hawking about the existence of God. And he's a smart little kid. Yeah, they had him on stage at a big college. And they're, okay, we want you to teach us. And they were ready to listen. I think it was a Christian college at that. But we want you to prove the existence of God. And the little kid had this gleam in his eye, but he started to give his discourse, and you can tell that he was just regurgitating what he had heard. It wasn't that, first of all, if he believed it for one, or he wrote it or came up with it on his own, but he was really good at sharing someone else's belief system or theory. You know, and that's kind of the same thing we see with religion. They don't have this personal revelation or this personal encounter. They're just going off of someone else's, what someone else told me. And that's, when it comes to religion, that's the big thing that I have a problem with. We see some of the fundamental Baptists, is like the gospel is like, let me share my revelation of God with you, and you believe that and become a follower of our church, our congregation, whatever. Versus the more Gnostic approach knowing God through relationship or an experience and an encounter with something outside of yourself. Right. And so there's that expression, too. It's like, hey, you can encounter God for yourself. Don't just take my word for it, but take it and try it. Even in this work, that works for everything, even like the universal law. Don't just take my word that I've gotten to this place that I want to be and I'm really comfortable and I'm excited about this journey. It took a long time to get here, but it could work for you, too, if you try it. Encourage people to do the same. And that's what, you know. It's about experience for me, experience or knowledge, to get the wisdom and understanding to go with your belief system, not just because I read this, a theory. That's why I try not to get really too big into conspiracy theories too much anymore. They're just theories. They're hard to prove. We can come up with theories, but I want to get into the stuff that we can apply and it works and it changes us and our neighborhood and our family, and people are envious of this light that we have or this knowledge or whatever, right? They want it. You know what I'm saying? They're hungry. They're asking for it. That's the stuff that I like to get into now.
Yeah.
It works.
Well, it's going from the disempowering to the empowering. So these are all belief structures. For instance, one belief structure could be that your genes determine gene expression, so that your genes will act precisely as they were programmed to from birth. But the science actually says on that is that 8 hours of meditation can change gene expression. So it means whatever your genes are telling you to do, you can tell them different. Now that's an empowering piece of information versus the disempowering information. Your genes control who you are and what you do. So when we're talking about finding out what you want to do in the world, this is the challenge that you're up against. You're up against people trying to flood you full of this disempowering information so that you will give your power to them or completely give it up, because then you're no longer a threat for the resources they want to steal.
Yeah,
and 100%. Where conspiracy comes into it, and I think is actually remarkably important, to never ignore a good conspiracy theory, is more the fact that sometimes, let's say, voting patterns or food habits, or these simple things that actually do physically affect you, or you can actually physically interact with politicians, etc.
Yeah.
These are the kind of conspiracies that you can gain evidence from that is fact-based. You know, who, what, when, where, why, and how, and you know the answers to those questions, you know the truth, and there you go, you can go and hold these people to account. However, if you're tuning into a talk radio show host, and they're saying, this is going on over here, and you can't do anything about it,
yeah,
is that empowering or disempowering? It's disempowering, isn't it? Now, again, that's what the theft of electrons is about, ladies and gentlemen. They're trying to thieve your energy by getting you to worry about something, something that you can't do anything about. You know what that does? It just causes stress, okay? Stress for which there is no release. And why exactly would you keep listening to that? Because they've got you in a state of fear and panic. Whenever I'm in a state of fear and panic, my higher thinking methodology goes off. For example, I had some hot knives going on the oven and I was about to start smoking some weed, and I hear this that you hear that scary kind of knock. And it was two police officers on my deck.
Wow.
So I was just freaking out, you know. But they weren't there to bust me or anything like that. They were there to ask questions about some kind of thing that happened in the paper or whatever the hell, right? But I was panicking and freaking out and trying to like conceal stuff and like putting the knives under the thing when I should have just, you know, very calmly just put them under the water, turn them down, turn it off, pack it away, put it in the thing, and then go say, hello, how's it going? Right? But I didn't. I panicked, and I did a whole bunch of really stupid, what would have seemed objectively very paranoid kind of stuff, because I've been busted before, and the fear gripped me. Now, in a micro sense, we all get that, and we can get that when we're listening to too much media that isn't filling us full of empowering information.
Yeah, fear, false evidence appearing real. You start to begin to worry about things that you can't change and may not ever happen, but you perceive it as a threat. And there's so many people that do that. And when we talk about some of the stuff, I've seen people make like bad decisions off of it. I've seen people move away from the Gulf Coast here in the States because of the oil spill. And there was a lot of stuff at the time about acid rain coming from the oil spill, that the acid was going to seep up and get in the clouds and destroy the crops and disintegrate and just tear stuff up. That was a crazy conspiracy theory. And I knew people who moved away, like families who moved away up and moved further up north because of this weird conspiracy theory. And, you know, you like to entertain it. One thing about them, though, you know, I think it takes a lot of different things to wake different people up. I don't know where you come from. I know you from when I first got into your work and found out about you. It was definitely a lot of political stuff. It was a lot of activism stuff. And then I started seeing more spiritual stuff from you and interviewing people about spirituality and archons and angels and the spirit realm and things like that. I think I've seen a natural progression where most people, whether it's you, I'm thinking this relates to you as well, but you get into the political side and try to change the world and try to rally and try to march and things like that, and you find out that the biggest influence that I can have is, like, I can only protest so many times until the door keeps getting slammed or the people drive off or whatever. Well, I do the work on myself and I study spiritual principles and I try to better myself in every area that I can, politically and then spiritually as well, and then I'll have a greater impact of changing the world around me, and then we collectively can change. There's big time Immortal Technique, he's definitely done that. Diesel Automatic is a conspiracy political rapper. All of these guys are taking more of a turn towards spirituality. It kind of happened for me, was political, and then it went straight spiritual. Was that kind of a progression for you, some of the political stuff, and then you got into more of the spiritual approach?
No, I've always been a man with my finger in many, many physical and metaphysical pies. So at the same time that I was going out and filming protests and participating in protests, I was also interviewing people about spiritual stuff and archons and things like that, because I wanted to know why I was protesting. Right, a lot of people don't want to know why they're protesting, and they might sound like, "What are you talking about? People want to know why they're protesting." It's like, no, they don't. Why do you say that? Well, because if you knew why you were protesting, you would know how futile it is. and what I mean by that is I've been to hundreds, maybe thousands of protests of varying sizes. The overwhelming, and in fact the only result that I've ever seen from any of those protests is exactly what was planned to happen happens anyway. Everything that people were protesting against, the reason why they're protesting against it is because it's going to happen anyway, and they just want to say something about it. They just want to say, no, we're not going to go quietly into the night. Mm-hmm. And I realized that there was actually a shortcut to that, which was talking with people online and protesting in an online media format. It seemed a lot more solid to me, because what happens at protests is that you have thousands upon thousands of people. Nobody can all have a say, of course, but those who do have the megaphones, those who do get up and do the speeches and things of that nature, you know, dozens of people each protest, never get anybody make a video of them. Never. All right, the amount of times I've got 4,000 videos on my channel, at least 1,000 or 2,000 of those from protest speeches, just of individuals saying the facts to an audience, those kind of thing. The activists are who have the information about the things. They're the people who actually really know why they're there, because the protest for them is almost inconsequential, these people who speak at the protests. It may sound funny to say, because their life is spent researching, attacking, holding to account. They've actually got a purpose, and the protesting is merely one symptom of their purpose in life. It is not the meaning of it.
It's like I said, these rules, these principles, I think they kind of exist in every facet of life, every niche. It's definitely in the religious aspect of where I come from. People who spend most of their time, instead of creating something beautiful or speaking about what they love, they have a ministry, even from a Christian perspective, about what they hate and what they're against. So they spend their energy trying to pull down others or warn people about that guy who's doing it wrong, or whatever the case is. That's going on with these protests. They protest outside of churches. You know, there's groups of Christian activists who show up and say, stay away from this preacher, stay away from this film. A Christian film will come out, and a certain group of other denominational believers will show up, and they'll protest it and say, stay away from it. And you begin to be known for what you're against rather than what you're for. What if all of those people, let's say 2,000 people who were showing up at protests and these rallies and stuff, what if they all collectively just the same energy that they would put into a protest, put it into creating something beautiful in the world that was like a counterbalance to what they're protesting? Not to just say, hey, I want my voice heard, but like, really, what if there was 2,000 Vinnie Eastwoods, like, that really showed up? You know what I'm saying? Anybody can do a podcast, but really showed up and put time, energy, and effort to make this thing work, and to, you guys won't let me talk, you won't let my voice be heard, I'm going to show you better than I can tell you. I'm going to create a platform where you're forced to hear my word. What if everybody did something similar? And I know it's not everybody. I'm not beckoning everyone to start a podcast, but whatever it is within them, if they want to be a hip-hop artist or whatever and talk about the truth or talk about what they're for in the music that way, what if there was 2,000 conscious hip-hop artists who market it and promote it and we could really take over this thing? I believe we could if we did it with excellence. And, you know, you're known around the world. You're renowned for what you do. I have friends who know you. I have random strangers I meet. I mention your name. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. They're, you know, you got your catchphrase and stuff. People know you, man. So what you've built, what I've built with my music and my podcasting platform and stuff, everyone else can do this too. It's not impossible. It's a beacon for change. It's a beacon for hope of right knowledge and understanding to teach the people the right way, not to get on here and shake your fist and I can't believe they're doing it this way. I can't believe it. But formulate an action like, okay, this is the way we do change. Whatever they're doing, we're going to do the opposite. Because that's not working. Let's try this. See if it works. You know? I believe in that.
Mm. People get paralyzed and they think, oh, but the New World Order is screwing me in 100,000 different ways a day. And I go, well, you can think up 100,000 different ways to screw them back. Okay? Make it consensual.
Definitely, man. There's ways that you have to get around this system. But they are... you know, that we talked about it yesterday, just the whole independent media and their attacks. And like we're talking about, the internet's here and exists for us to build whatever platform we want. Literally, you can be whatever you want to be on the internet, whatever you can think of. That person in the back of your head that you wish you could be, like you can become that person on the internet.
You want to be a transsexual unicorn, ladies and gentlemen?
You can do that.
You can do it.
And sit in front of a webcam and have old men send you money to watch you. Like, you could do that. Like, anything you could think of. If you want to be an activist, if you want to be a rapper, if you want to be whatever it is, like, you can do it. And it's beautiful. But they are...
That's another element as well, is cooking, health shows, even these these little practical things that you do in your everyday life, ladies and gentlemen. People didn't have parents who taught them that like you do. And you'll be surprised that there'll actually be a lot of people out there that just for simple things that you do online to show people how to do average household chores and whatnot, and the amount that people actually appreciate you for, that is how easy it is to make a positive difference, to do something you do every day, but on video.
And do it for a living. Do it and be able to make an income off of it so you can do it for a living. Instead of being stuck at a dead-end job, you can create your own job. You can create your own lane. You can brand something. You can invent something. People are doing it every day with the power of the internet. It is getting tricky, especially when it's in some of the fringe stuff that we're doing. The weird thing is, I say that the market is getting crowded, or everybody's starting podcasts or whatever the case is. It's definitely happening, but there's millions and millions and billions of people out there who are potential customers, who are potential audience members or supporters of your work or whatever you want to bring to the table.
Well, there's only 6 media companies that own everything now. There used to be tens of thousands. And so what we're seeing actually now is a resurgence, because now we've got tens of thousands of separate areas where they used to have their own talk radio show host talking about their own local issues and things like that, not just corporate puppet mouthpieces and what have you, just talking on local issues. It's one way of putting the slider back in our favor, is no longer listening to the enormous corporate broadcast platforms and finding the independent people that actually represent your voice, and knowing that the media is wrong and that you have actually been right the whole time. So when you're sitting there getting angry about them lying about this or lying about that, understand that you could be listening to somebody else analyzing these lies and so on and so forth, and make you feel like your opinion, your factual opinion, is in fact validated, as opposed to driving yourself crazy and starting to question your own sanity, which is the alternative.
Yeah, I think it gets tricky for the fringe, like I said, for people who are speaking about the narrative that they say don't speak on, You know, there's keywords, there's buzzwords. If you say that word, the algorithm picks it up and your video's either pulled or demonetized or whatever the case is. So for some of the stuff that we get into, it's getting tricky to kind of maneuver around. Hopefully with everything that I'm speaking about, like, we have the power to take this back. Hopefully, and I know people are trying, but hopefully we'll have some other platforms raise up that take care of their creators and mimic what's working, but you know, the whole adpocalypse and deleting people's channels, that stuff is insane. That is scary, man. You know, that, like I said, that happened to me, and all my channels were connected. My family vlogging channel of, you know, going on family vacation and vlogging, like, that's deleted. I didn't back that stuff up. All of these videos we did together and with my family, it's gone. You can't email YouTube. You can't, hey, can you please put, you can send a generic email back and try to get with a network. There's ways to try it, but for the most part, you know, for the, like, you know what I'm saying, the little channels it happens to. I was on Project Camelot a couple weeks ago. Carrie Cassidy, I don't know if you keep up with her, but yesterday they did an interview and they talked about false flags, and I think they put that in a title. She got a strike on her channel. She lost her privileges to go live on her main channel, and so that's her source of income. She's been doing what we're doing and going live with random people in the truth movement and who have something to bring to the table, and just because they did one video that they didn't like, and because they talked about false flags and David Hogg and all that stuff, they pulled it. She got a strike, and it's that simple to, like, man, now I got to think of another way to try to pull this off and make this happen, or try to send that traffic to another channel. But then when they find out that you got another channel, they're going to keep doing the same thing. So I'm really hoping that we get some other platforms up. Facebook is doing the same thing. You know, we got pages, man, with, I got three pages that, you know, I have about 60,000 likes with three pages, all organic. I'll share a video, it'll let 60 people see it. The reach is 60 people on like 20,000 likes. That is insane.
Yeah, man, I got like 4,000 friends, and I posted a link to my website and asked, if you can see this, please give it a like. I got 30 likes out of 4,000.
Yeah, something's got to happen. When we first got on Facebook in the early days, man, it was cool. Like, those 4,000, yeah, if you looked at your stream was steadily moving, if you remember that. It was hard to keep up with stuff, and then you can kind of favorite your people that would move slower or be at the top more often or whatever. That had happened. Obviously, if you have 4,000 people and they're all posting, it's going to be moving fast. I don't know if I'd rather do that. There's got to be a healthy in between, though, like in the social media, because they've censored everything. They've throttled certain media outlets and types of articles, and now I'm sure you've seen the Facebook has, if you go into the account settings, they have you labeled for your political view that they see you as, and it shows it in there. Me and my wife are like totally different. We have different labels in there that they've labeled us conservative or moderate or whatever the case is, and so they throttle certain articles and stuff that you're sharing. It is insane that there's an agenda. Someone has an agenda out there to do that, and it is crazy. I think they're getting scared. I think they're getting scared of the reach of the podcast. You know, there's more people listening to the Joe Rogan podcast and things like that than are watching Fox News on certain nights. More people tune into Joe Rogan's podcast than watch Fox News. And if you had all of these people just taking the power from this false narrative, I think they're trying to make a change. They're doing all this stuff for a reason, simply because of that.
Trying to bottleneck it, essentially. But what I find interesting about it is that when you have a reaction to your censorship, that's sometimes when the censorship gets knocked back and becomes freer. So what people have been tossing around the ideas of doing is perhaps abandoning YouTube, abandoning Facebook, going to other platforms and things like that. I've tried this. And you know what happens to those other platforms? Bugger all people join them, there is too much work for the people who are running them to get ahead, and eventually they close down, and whatever content or time you've spent in it is gone. It means nothing, which is precisely what happens when you, you know, say something controversial and get censored on the other platforms. So what the hell is the difference? You know, it's either you go on an uncensored platform and nobody hears you, or you go on a censored platform and nobody hears you. All right, this is the options that they're trying to give us here.
Yeah.
And the key difference here is connection. Okay, are you actually connecting with people directly? Are you interacting? Are you discussing ideas? Are you bouncing off each other? That kind of thing. That's actually the only thing that's really important is communication. And it seems to me that without communication, the only alternative you have is to fight each other. Now, that's why we're being split into these conservative and liberal camps, when both parties, as we know, are bonded by the same ideologues, satanic occultists, etc. So it doesn't really matter whether you're liberal or conservative. You're still a Satanist nowadays, according to the demographics. And I feel that the real interesting part of trying to put people into boxes really become is that you don't actually have a discussion with these people before you put them in a box. You don't actually listen to what their thoughts are before you put them in a box, because if you did, you wouldn't try putting them in a box anymore, because you'd realize they're in most part, like let's say the vast majority of people agree on about 95% of stuff, right? So let's say you don't want to get killed or exterminated, you don't want to be mass surveilled, you don't want to be poisoned by corporations and stuff like that. These are the fundamentals, everybody agrees on them. But what you do very easily in order to stop all those 95% of people uniting together against perhaps the 4% of psychopaths that really just want to BS and burn everything down, is you try to say, no, you don't agree on 95% of things, you only agree on about 50% of things. So that way you can fight 50 times as much without actually noticing that we're the ones who are playing you off against each other. It's like a psychological Don King fight, where the scumbaggery elements of society control both the fighters. And essentially, we are just spinning our wheels here a lot of the time when we're talking about the other. The other, they're different from me. Oh, we've got nothing in common. Oh, these people are conservatives and I'm a liberal. You know, it's just no. There's no real fundamental difference between you on the fundamental principles. Essentially, what people are, I'm not sure if it's foolishness so much as it is they're just being manipulated into something, is to follow the leader. Okay, and this is the real biggest problem that I have, is individuals following their own conscience versus individuals following the diktats of somebody else who they don't even know. And that Trump cult that came out of nowhere was just all of a sudden, and now it's starting to fall apart with Alex Jones swearing about him and that kind of thing. So it's been quite fun to watch that from day one of the presidency, when he appointed dark occultists and globalists to fill his entire cabinet, you knew that the game was up. But now, a year and a half later or so, people who actually put that dark cabinet into place, who helped support it and that kind of thing, are even now starting to see that perhaps they were scammed. Either that, or they were scammers themselves, and now they're just trying to save face because they don't want everybody to realize that they're actually just a complete effing liar and were manipulating you the whole time because they knew they would get good ratings and a lot of extra money from it.
Yep. I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the character Alex Jones. You know, he's doing that same thing, and I think Alex Jones is in on the script. He knows what's up. You know, he's an opportunist. You know what I'm saying? Not that he's a bad person, but he's an opportunist. You know, I think there's a lot of people who are willing to betray you. They're like the Judas who will betray you for that bag of money. You know what I'm saying? At the drop of a dime. So to really take back the power to ourselves, like I said, I think it is what you're talking about, community, finding the threads that make us the same. I've studied, you know, under the works of Santos, man, and really look up to that guy. And it was, I want to tell you too, it was a really beautiful interview you did with him when he was going through a lot of that stuff, and you just kind of had a heart-to-heart interview with him. Just let him know, hey, I'm here for you, man, worried about you. you know, you got a friend in me type interview, man. So hats off to you for that. I definitely heard that one and did the same as well, man. Santos is a really good guy. But we have these different people as Santos Bonacci or somebody from whatever group. I pull people from all walks of life, from, you know, the religious right. Even today, I had a guy, he was just batting about. He's a pretty big name, too. He's a guy named Christafari. He's a Christian reggae guy, and he was just going against marijuana, like 90 to nothing. I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, I'm not gonna debate you on my show. That's one thing I don't really debate on my podcast. I just like to have a discussion, and I'll give my little rebuttal at the end. And hey, it is what it is. But to really build with someone, not to build upon the marijuana thing with them, but to find some of the other things that we can build upon, and find people from all walks of life to where we can find commonality with them. And while I'm doing my podcast, a lot of times people are screaming in the chats, debate them, whether it's a Jordan Maxwell or somebody, and they say something that makes them uncomfortable, and they want me to aggressively come at an older gentleman like Jordan Maxwell, who I respect and who has been somewhat of a teacher to me in the past. They want me to debate him and, no, Jordan, I'm calling you out. I would rather listen to the interview, let the guy speak, find what I agree with, and let's build upon that. And I'll tell you, like, my platform is growing. It's flourishing. There's a lot. I'm getting new listeners daily. I'm getting inboxes and messages about people who honor that they're tired of the debate, they're tired of the arguments and stuff like that. And people are cool with listening to someone else's story, even if it's from a religious standpoint. And I get a lot of religious people who listen to my stuff, and they appreciate the honest conversation and finding the syncretism, the similarities, similarities, and building upon that. And that's sexy to me now. That's like, you know, we don't have to be right at the end of the day about religious debate or even political, for that matter. I come from a realm of both debates, really, the political and the religious, where you had to be right and you had to win every conversation. And now, moving into where I am now with this podcast and stuff like that, it's growing and it's beautiful, man. Are you noticing anything like that too? I don't know if you really get into a lot of debates. I know you're just interested in people's story for the most part.
I like to debate people in person, you know, when it's just one on one, and we're actually just trying to
not for ratings and try to
by stuff. Well, I mean, those are debates for the masses, and as far as I'm concerned, any debate for the masses is by definition mass debating. So it's a waste of time. That's what she said. Now, I also wanted to talk upon this element, because if you talk about communication, and debates are actually a good way of communicating, but people don't know what the word debate actually means, or rather, they don't know what the term argument means. They go, I don't want to hear people arguing. Okay, what's the definition of an argument? An argument is two people with opposing viewpoints listening quietly and conscientiously to those opposing viewpoints and offering their thoughts upon them politely. Does that sound like something negative or horrible, or does that suddenly fill you full of, like, did you just get a rush right then as I said that? Because I did. I was just like, man, that sounds like a really awesome conversation to listen to. Two people who actually have a conscience and are willing to listen and are completely open and share an opposing viewpoint. Wow. How often do we see that? Not very often at all, because people often have, what would you call it, an emotional attachment to their ideals. They're not looking at it just from a strictly intellectual standpoint, or just looking at the facts without some kind of emotional shovel in the soil there to hold on to, you know, that kind of thing. If you're wrong, and I say this to myself a lot of the time, if you're wrong, accept it, because otherwise you will continue to be wrong and you will also become dishonest. And that's what Mark Twain once said, is that an honest man, once he's confronted with the truth that he is wrong, will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest. And that kind of exact same challenge exists within us all whenever we have a conversation with somebody. And a really good channel, I think, Charisma on Command, he did a very interesting take on Jordan Peterson's debate tactic recently. And one of the most interesting elements of how he debates is that he instantly relaxes his body language, right? Why do you do that? It's because your body will then send a signal to your brain that you're relaxed. How do you win a debate without getting angry and shrill and becoming emotional? By being relaxed. That's what we've got to do in order to grow up, essentially. This is what adults are supposed to do. And unfortunately, we've been given bad examples, very bad examples, left, right, and center, of incredibly emotionally closed off, narcissistic attention-seeking bastards like myself, who aren't actually interested in getting to the truth. We're more interested in getting their opinion out.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Like I said, it's hard for me, and yeah, the way you explain that is like a revelation to me, because like you said, I do come from the religious background, and you talk about an emotional attachment to a belief system, and anybody who challenges that is an enemy to that belief system. The emotional attachment is, I'm wrong and I'm going to burn in hell for all of eternity, for one, or my pastor and this man that I've been paying my hard-earned money is wrong, and I'm a part of a lie or a shill. That's the weird thing when it gets into the religious stuff for me, because that's where I come from. So most of those debates, most of those arguments were shouting matches, were it never approached from a place of I want to learn. I'm here to learn from leaders. Now there's people within those movements who are, but the leaders and some of the people who have their minds made up, it's a turnoff to me now. And that's why that has birthed within me more of the, hey, let's build upon what we can agree with. I can totally debate you on so much stuff. I don't want to. It makes me more conscious to find that common ground. And I'm thriving right now. Like, it's really interesting how much is growing. You know, I'm learning that. I'm learning too. It's something new, because I've come from that background of like, you got a problem with it. This is the truth, and you can't. You know, this is it. And it's something you don't even know. It's a theory. Like, your theory is truth. You know what I'm saying? You can't prove it. You can't prove it. Jesus was a white man. Jesus was black. Jesus was there. Whatever. Religious belief it is, having to deal with the Bible, you just accept it by faith. You accept it by faith and you believe it and you hold it as your personal truth. And if anybody comes against that, they're a threat, man. That's scary. You know, I've been in those fight or flight moments where people, and then they just start, you're wrong. They're shouting, they get violent, you know what I'm saying? And that happens, you know, religious and political.
That's right, and I try to shy away from that when I can. So I think we're nearly coming to the end of this hour. Now, Derek Truthseeker is going to be with us for the second hour, ladies and gentlemen, and I do want to make sure that you go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, and think about donating, because, you know, growth goes where the money flows, essentially. And at the moment, the thing that seems to be really, really growing massively is the military-industrial complex and the police state. So if some money were funneled into outlets that try to expose that and prevent it from controlling everything, that'd be really lovely, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Now, I can't hear the break coming, though, can we? It's about a minute out. Okay, so I do want to think about in the next hour here, what you do is we go into the first hour, we go through our belief systems and that kind of thing, and how we really look at things, usually using the prism analogy, looking at the same object just from different angles a lot of the time. And how do you get even deeper into that? Because it ultimately, guilt, I think, the things that I'm guilty about are often what give me the most revelation about myself. Why am I guilty of this? and I see behind your eyes a little bit of guilt about, I was this religious guy for some time.
So, definitely.
I know that feel, bro. We've all followed something without following ourselves properly. So we're going to get into a little bit deeper perspective, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com on American Freedom Radio.
Is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our stringent quality controls and absolute zero GMOs plus testing for heavy metals makes us unique in the storable foods market. Our line of fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Take out the amount you need and reseal the package for use within the next 6 months. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's www.simplycleanfoods.net today.
This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
American Survival Wholesale is a proud sponsor of the American Freedom Radio. And when you purchase quality products from AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, you help support this program. Our quality non-GMO foods do not contain MSG, high fructose corn syrup, or heavy metals. At American Survival Wholesale, you can choose from over 8,000 quality products, including self-defense weapons, bug-out bags, and long-term storable food at wholesale prices. We also have custom food packs available, including gluten-free, dairy-free, and vegetarian packs. If we don't have it, you don't need it. American Survival Wholesale is a veteran-owned and operated company which also supports our veterans in need, and we are very active in disaster relief. If you would like to become a distributor, please email us at bugoutamerica@usa.com or call 818-720-0759. We offer free consultations to answer all your questions. Do it today while things are calm. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com.
Nicotine, alcohol, good drugs. Coincidentally, tax drugs. Ooh, how does this work? Thank God they're taxing alcohol, man. It means we got those good roads we can drive on. Because I'll tell you something, I'll be honest, man. If I were going to legalize a drug, it sure wouldn't have been alcohol. Sorry, there's better drugs and better drugs for you. That's a fact. Pot is a better drug than alcohol. Fact. Fact. Stop your internal dialogue. But Bill, alcohol's... Shut up! You're wrong. Get over it. I'll prove it to you, man. You're at a ball game or a concert and someone's really violent and aggressive and obnoxious. Are they drunk or are they smoking pot? They're drunk. I have never seen people on pot get in a fight because it is impossible. Hey, buddy. Hey, what? Hey, hey. End of argument.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously a factor, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does. Or they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests?
Well, that's no fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shills and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
Launch sequence initiated.
We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good.
Delete the remote the old output.
Prepare your mind to experience American Freedom Radio.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Levity is good. It relieves the tension and the fear of death.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I had a trouble unmuting my microphone. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio for the listening discomfort of the intelligence agents listening. In fact, it might actually make them comfortable, because a revelation occurred to me one time when I was watching a documentary about the CIA. One time, the CIA made a joke documentary about themselves and one of their criminal operations, and then launched it onto the thing. So it's showing that they've got a bit of a sick sense of humour. And then it occurred to me why my channel hasn't been censored or completely deleted yet. They enjoy the show! Welcome, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Because, you know, just think about it, for example. If your job was to sit at a computer all day to listen to people who talk about sort of the same kind of stuff that they're talking about and that kind of thing, just, you know, monitoring enemy communications, wouldn't you prefer to be entertained while you were doing your job and actually maybe having a few laughs and stuff like that? And if you were an evil bastard with a sick sense of humor, this is actually probably the closest you could get to a form of entertaining show for sociopaths. So, don't know what that says about me. Probably says I'm narcissistic. Anyway, my very special guest, Derek the Truth Seeker, and we've been talking over the first hour here about a lot of the thought processes that go through your head when you're defining the difference between having a belief and having knowledge. Because oftentimes when you go into something with a belief, you're going in with a certain manner of insecurity about things, a certain unrelaxed, unopen frame. And that is what we call brainwashing and cult indoctrination. And don't worry, it happens to us all. We all naturally have this instinct to go towards groups. We naturally want to know truths about things and what have you. Now, that means that we are open, therefore, to manipulation. Manipulation is either black or white. You're either doing it for something bad, or you're manipulating something for something good. You know? The amount of times that I've tricked people into doing things that are actually good for them, or for which I benefited none. No, you shouldn't pay me to do your website. I'll just show you in 5 minutes how to do it yourself.
I know. Don't you
Why did I do that?
So welcome back, bro. So what would you like to get into right now?
Like I said, I do have a new album dropping Friday, which is 420, which there's a lot of stuff dropping 420, a lot of albums. I guess that's a date a lot of people have picked. I have a new album entitled Seer. Very excited about that. It's my fourth release when it comes to this esoteric spiritual hip-hop stuff, and it's been a pretty interesting road and starting a niche where you're talking about angels and aliens and spiritual encounters and stuff like that in hip-hop music. I mean, I don't know how many people are doing that, so it's kind of hard to kind of find that niche market, you know?
Well, we went into a studio, my friend and I, for our band and that kind of thing, and the guys who were there are actually doing a comedy hip-hop album from a group from New Zealand, and they're releasing their album on 420 as well. So there's a lot of cross-pollination, etc., that's going along there. But what the guy at the studio told me is that what people are really, really interested in now is finding out how you do it. How do you come up with the lyrics? How do you come up with the beats? And they don't just want to hear about it. They actually want to see it happening. They want to see somebody just jamming, coming up with a song, and then editing the lyrics and stuff like that, and then changing the beat, and then redoing it, and seeing that whole process from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's an interesting revelation from a guy just sitting at a soundboard recording people, you know?
Yep. That's true, though. It's scary because you think it's going to kill the magic, because a lot of times the final product is way better than just having like one raw vocal take going over a beat. But I've done that. I've been going live on my Facebook and having, you know, my video and then the screen where you're looking at the program. And like you said, you know, there's people taking notes, people who are engineers, and they're recording their own stuff, and they're writing stuff down as, oh, this is how you do it, writing that down. Whereas there's other people who they will package that into a course. Hey, you want to know how to engineer to do this style of music? Here it is. Here's 7 videos that go and show you. I go live for 5 hours. People are just like, hey, I did what you did, you know, and it worked, you know what I'm saying? So but yeah, it's cool to do that. People do want to see it. People want to see how it happens, and they get to hear the raw nitty gritty stuff when you're live like that doing it.
They know that nothing's being held back, and they know that it's raw and it's real. And I think maybe in our digital age, what is real has become very, very difficult to find and see. Not only is the reality around us starting to be augmented with these new, like, 3D glasses and things like that that we've got, or the Snapchat manipulations where you can put ears on yourself, or turn a homeless person that you're stepping over in New York City into a beautiful flower bed. Is, oh, I don't want to crush those flowers, you know. What people are really missing, I think, perhaps in their entire life, is something real. And I find that the way that we achieve anything real for ourselves is usually through mentorship. You know, somebody who's already knows how to be real, and you just learn by example. Monkey see, monkey do.
Well, I mean, with podcasting and doing this type of thing, you know, you see people doing it and you want to, like, mimic things. But for me, there was a couple people. I mean, there's two people. There's people who are being authentic with their podcasting or whatever. Joe Rogan, I was listening to just hours and hours of him. I was a truck driver here recently, about 8 months ago. And I would listen to hours and hours of what he was doing, and I felt like he was authentic. I thought, like, you could hear a show about hunting bears, and then the next show was about eating mushrooms, and then the next show was about religion. You know what I'm saying? So from what I come from, it's like you can only have one thing and do that really good. But being authentic, you could be into a lot of stuff. So let's just take for instance, like I had my channel before I got deleted. I was up to about 8,000 subscribers, which was good, you know, the highest I had ever gotten to on YouTube, and had a pretty good audience doing my podcast, releasing music and stuff. And then I said, you know what, I like the game. I game, me and my wife game a lot. I game a lot of my free time is spent gaming. So I started gaming on my conspiracy and paranormal spiritual channel. And all of these people would get the alert that True Seek is live, and here I am playing Pokemon games and stuff like that, and lost a lot of subscribers, a lot of bad, you know, people I don't know, you know, they just subscribe because they seen an interview with Jordan Maxwell or whatever and thought that they could find more from that channel. But they were, you know, they got upset that they seen something outside of the niche or whatever, right? So it told me, it's like, okay, don't show people that side of you when you're, like, they don't need to see that. So act like it doesn't exist. So don't talk about it. Don't, because people, spirituality gurus, which a lot of people look to me as a guru in gaming, there's a disconnect there. Or even you like to watch sports. So now you're a spiritual guru and you like to play or watch basketball, you know. There's these weird disconnects that we have for what you can be, this box that you were talking about earlier that we like to put people in. And on the old channel, I was put in that box, and I was scared to, because I seen what happened. I was losing subscribers, and people are like laughing at you and making memes. I had people making memes about me and stuff, catching Pokemon and stuff like that. And so, but I've seen this statement where I would see people have this genuine love and this genuine passion to do for a living whatever they love to do and just be open about it and just find a way for it all to fit. So with taking these strides now with my podcast, like I get into some really deep conversation. We talk about aliens, we talk about abductions, but we do it, we don't have to mimic coast to coast, or we don't have to mimic a counselor or the spiritual gurus who are thriving doing what they love to do. You just show up and be who you were created to be whoever God created you to be.
What's interesting about that is that you can always tell people's influences when you listen to them. And that's not necessarily say that they're absolutely mimicking them or they're not being authentic or something like that, because everybody we listen to influences us and changes the being that we are if we want it to. And I felt that maybe for the first 20 years of my life, the largest part of what I was doing in my interactions with somebody was looking for something that I liked better than an aspect of myself that I had, and then copying it, and eventually all of those copies from those multitude of different personalities I'd encountered over 20 years became my own unique composite personality, full of its own contradictions and intricacies. And that's what being genuine basically is that nobody's absolutely consistent, because the brain doesn't work like that. It doesn't all just work on one side of it.
Consistency is I think one of the biggest things, but and just being open and honest about who you are, what you like and what you dislike. For me, it was a big revelation, especially coming from the religious background. Like, you can't be religious and drink alcohol or whatever the case is, you know. Like, they have these rules, these unspoken rules that they've made up, that you'll be accepted and promoted if you stay within this boundary. If any part of you goes outside of that, then, you know, you're done. We really can't deal with you anymore. So from that aspect, and then I also see that in the spiritual realm, people want to follow the person who is the most spiritual. Like, let me find the dude who knows it all and let me follow him. I can't follow all these guys saying different stuff. So let me follow Santos, whatever.
Let's go,
you know?
Find who got the biggest spirit, okay?
Really, that's just how sadly sound. But, you know, and just being okay to be a contradiction. It's okay. Like, people have me on video saying one thing on one interview and then going to another, and they're like, aha, I got you. I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out too, bro. That's one thing that I have, and I'm okay with it. See, back in the day, I wouldn't have been okay with it. I'm like, man, they got me. They got me. They can make a good exposed video, you know, but I'm still trying to figure this stuff out too, you know, and that's okay.
It's like a scientist says, hey, did you know that bones crack under this exact amount of pressure? And you're like, oh. And then 2 years later, after doing a few more tests, no, actually, they break under this kind of pressure. Ah, you're a charlatan. I got you.
Oh, that's changing definitely every year. I just heard something on the radio yesterday. They were saying, like, staying away from certain salads and stuff that they were saying. But that stuff changes with the wind, man. You know, like with the food and things that are good for you and what to do and what not to do.
Better yet, don't... I've got another Mark Twain quote on that one. Be careful in reading health books. You could die of a misprint.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that basically probably on your page. Yeah. Yeah, it's so true, but it's okay. It's okay to embrace your differences and not to act like you have it all figured out, and don't be afraid of that. Like, whatever you want to do in life, like, pursue it, do it, learn it, let it consume you. I've listened to hours of podcasts about podcasting. You know, I've listened to hours of podcasts of people doing it a certain type of way, and like you said, you do pick up a little bit of all of it. A little bit of the Joe Rogan, a little bit of the George Norrie, you know, here and there, and all your life experiences put together, and you know, it's eclectic and it's cool, and it'll find its audience if you're honest and you are doing what you know you're supposed to be doing. Now, you have to learn how to do it and how to take it to the next level. So this comes with whatever you want to do. Whether if you want to be an online gamer, stream video games, there's people making way more money than us streaming themselves playing video games, eating chips, you know what I'm saying, and being silly. And they make hundreds of thousands a year. Kids, teenagers doing this. And that's what I was going to say earlier. I was going to try to point to the fact that, you know, people are like fighting over their audiences and followers and stuff like that, when there's billions of people on the planet. And you look around and there's people doing this with hundreds of thousands of followers or subscribers on YouTube that you've never even heard of. Like, who is this kid? Or who is this person? You're like, wow, this guy's got this much pull. I've never even heard of this kid. And nobody you know knows this kid. You know what I'm saying? And so, but we don't have to be so possessive over, you know, we're the only show you need to listen to, or don't listen to these other people because of this or because of that. And I see a lot of that going on.
People getting all reactionary and stuff, and I think it's just it might be a maturity thing, if that's not an arrogant thing to say. Is becoming mature means you become surer of yourself and less sure about how you instantaneously judge and react to other people and their actions, right? It's about having confidence in yourself, but not confidence of your knowledge of others that you don't know, right? That's competency. Because ultimately, do you know everything I know, bro? No. Then perhaps I can teach you something. But on the same token, do I know everything you know? Well, no. Well, then you can probably teach me something. Now, if we're going on that kind of wavelength and things like that, just analyze that and see whether or not it is reflected in the media that you are consuming, or the political class that is running your country. Is it reflected within that kind of open, honest discourse? And I say it's sorely, sorely lacking. Ugo, you could have no training, folks. Go live on your Facebook or YouTube or something like that. And then you could do better than the mainstream media in your local town will broadcast that night. All right? No knowledge, no training. Just doing a Facebook live thing. It'll be more entertaining, probably got more hits and everything as well, just as long as you're just being genuine. Imagine that.
There's people doing it, yeah. There's people doing it, definitely.
We are destroying the media, okay? So they all had these centralized platforms. They've got these physical buildings. They've got physical broadcast satellites and so on and so forth. The only thing we have is a device that's connected to the internet through nothing. And we have almost identical power when it comes to producing things, you know. It could cost you millions upon millions upon millions, for example, to open a broadcast television studio in Auckland, New Zealand, rent out the space for your studio and so on and so forth, and pay the broadcast licensing fees. It could cost you a couple of $1,000s to buy your own kit and your own green screen and set it up in a room in your house. And not only that, but your ongoing costs would be next to nil. So that is how I think online media is beating mainstream media, because it's like in Vietnam when the guerrilla fighters were using their enemy's strength as a weakness. The US was big, it was heavy, it had a lot of soldiers to coordinate, it had fire bases, supply lines all over the place. They couldn't guard everything, so they just attacked them when they were weak and they'd be too slow to react. That's the kind of thing that we need to be thinking about here, a sort of guerrilla-style, independent, leaderless movement in all forms of media, in all forms of industry, for that matter, because art itself, I feel, expression for art, you know, something that's actually got a purpose or actually got a meaning to it, usually comes from people who've experienced pain and want to change that situation for other people. Often that's the case. These are where the great artists come from, and there's even a metric to that. It says that the biggest qualifier for whether or not you're going to become a great artist is the amount of suffering that you've had in your life. You know, so it's about being grateful for the bad things that happened to you, because if they didn't, you wouldn't be you.
Mm-hmm. That's something that we've been talking about a lot as well on the podcast, is the fact that you know, going through that dark night of the soul, going through those times of questions and doubt and feeling alone, like sometimes that's what makes you. It makes you who you are. And when you're going through it, you want nothing but to come out of it. You want freedom. You want to leave that behind you, whether it's a breakup or whatever. It's different things for different people. But when you look back at those demons, if we want to call them, like, I'm learning to love those demons, right? Learning to appreciate them in my life for that reason and for that season to build character within me. And I, like you said, I wouldn't be the person that I am today if I didn't go through that heartache and that pain and things like that, those questions, the dark night of the soul. So I look at everything as a learning experience, and even being thankful for the bad things that have come into my life, you know?
You ever have a conversation with somebody and they're very, very naive, and you think to yourself, you know, you need a little bit more suffering love, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Right. I can help you with that if you want. I could whack you over the head or steal something from you if that would help.
It's usually time, man. I think time has its way on people, has an effect, you know? Time will change your heart. Like going through those trials and tribulations or whatever, it takes time. You know, people are so sure of their belief or what the truth is or whatever. Like I said, we, you know, standing for things that you don't want nobody to know you used to believe or say, or how naive you were at some point that you thought you had it all figured out. You know, it creates a sense of humility, I think, when you're able to kind of, you know, understand that you don't have it all figured out, or you don't, and you know what I'm saying, but you're still willing to learn and not get bitter in that growing process, you know?
I wonder now how similar humility and humor really are. Imagine it. Those without humility, how often are they laughing about themselves and the stupid things that they've done over their lives? Mm.
Yeah.
I constantly get hit with those, man. Something I said to a girl that freaked her out or something like that and caused her to walk away. Damn it. Something I texted somebody in a moment of rage and then lost money as a result. Damn it. You know, all of these little things, they go cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. Like, essentially, it's money in the experience bank. You know, and I don't know, if you're starved for experience and you're bored or whatever, start praying. You know, I did that one time. I was getting so much money in from donations and things like that. I was gaining a hell of a lot of weight. We were eating takeaway nearly every night, and we were just tired and lazy and that kind of thing. So I went, God, please fuck up my life. I've had it too good for too long, and I need to be taught a very, very big lesson with a huge kick in the guts. Next morning, my PayPal got cancelled, and so about 40% of my income dried up. Yeah. And I was like, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. The only time I ever actually pray for something is if I want something bad to happen, and that's the time when something bad actually will happen. You know, it's pretty reliable. I would have thought.
It reminds me of a song. A song like that. It's a song by the band Disturbed. Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
They have a song called Prayer, and he says, "Let me enlighten you. This is the way I pray. Living my life isn't hard enough. Take everything away, burn me alive inside, like make it hard." And it sounds really weird, but if you look at the other side, we know what comes with that pain and what comes with that heartache is that character, is those life experiences. So looking at it from that standpoint, that kind of makes sense versus being something sadistic or something crazy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, try listening to your first podcast or my first radio show, and you're like, "Oh, I'm awful."
Yeah, oh, trust me. Yeah, 2012. Yeah.
And like maybe the first 10 that you do, maybe the first 20 or the first 100 are just borderlining on average.
Well, the first big guest.
Yeah.
The first big guest.
And how you're stammering and stuttering, you're like all starstruck and you don't know what questions to ask and that kind of thing, and you got that quiver in your voice and blah blah blah. It's kind of cute now when you think of your younger self, you know, going through that process. And now you're just jaded as hell. It's like, yeah, I'm interviewing John Perkins, author of the Economic Hitman and stuff like that, and now he's a shaman and stuff, and you're going to give us some solutions, you know, just you just kind of get past that and you want to go to the next level. Okay, what's the most dangerous and intimidating thing I could interview somebody about next?
It evolves, the whole aspect of it, of getting people. Like, I think early on it definitely started out of wanting to know for yourself. Like, I'm wanting to, you know, I interviewed all the people that I was researching under, you know. That's where my podcast started. I was reading their materials and listening. I would listen to other interviews with people, even yours. I would listen to your interview with Jordan Maxwell or whoever, and I would write stuff down, like, man, why didn't he ask him this? And then I get him on my show and let me ask him this. A lot of Coast to Coast AM, a lot of people who have been on that broadcast, you know, and I would ask them genuine questions that I had, not that I thought it would be a good interview, but those questions that don't get asked. And I really wanted to learn, and it was out of a genuine place of learning. And so now, you know, I've talked to these people a lot. I'm not as hungry for knowledge and information now. I think I'm at a place personally where I've studied so much. Now I'm just trying to find the best ways to share it, share the knowledge that's practical for people, ever how deep or esoteric it may be. How can we make this in layman's terms and just share it with people that it has the most impact, versus like, but I still enjoy those conversations with the Jordan Maxwells or the Santoses or whatever. Not that I'm like, okay, Santos, the earth is flat. Okay, tell me more. Like, that's not, I'm not really in that phase anymore. I was the first time I talked to him. So there's a special place in my heart for those early interviews, you know?
I think maybe what was it, at the end of the first hour, I talked about guilt. You know what I was guilty of? I was guilty of being an Alex Jones little cultist, mate, you know? Going about, oh, we're not going to, you know, with the megaphone doing the whole shtick and aggro, we're going to resist your tyranny, blah, blah, blah. After a certain period of time, I realized that it wasn't my voice coming out of that megaphone. It was somebody else's ideas.
Yeah.
Right? And I think maybe that's the real cutting thing. Like, copy whoever inspires you. It doesn't matter. Like, let's say you got inspired by the speeches of Adolf Hitler, for example. And if you could speak German, you could understand the things he was saying. We need to get rid of the elite. We want to have good housing for all Germans. We want to have great funding for public services and things like that. We need to evolve. We need to become a better society, blah, blah, blah. All these weasel words that a narcissist will use in order to manipulate somebody into following them and copying their narcissistic, nihilistic behavior, right? And then you go, oh, that's what I was about to become. Then you've got a choice. Only then, once you have that realization of what you are becoming, then you can make a choice and you say, no, I don't want to become another copy of this. I want to be me. There's certain parts of this that, you know, still work, but they were working in isolation. They didn't work as a whole format, essentially, because everybody's got little aspects of their personality that are not good, and everybody got aspects of their personality that are
that you have to fight against. Like, you have to consciously say, do not do this, don't go there, don't make it happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the phrase that I came up with is, I am a monster and I must wrap myself in chains so that I do not hurt people again. And Jordan, and it was interesting because maybe last week, I think it was, I was watching a Jordan Peterson video on the Joe Rogan Experience, and he referred to himself as a monster, as I do. And it was at that moment that I realized that Jordan's exactly came to the exact same realization that I did. Oh my God, I'm a narcissist. I've got all these negative tendencies. Now I realize that I've got them. That means I have a moral obligation to do something about them, address them, and hold them in check. Whoa. That instantly makes you a better man, just having that realization. And those are the kind of people who actually become greater leaders, because they realize that they're not a good man. They're just trying to do the right thing.
Yep, that's that inner dialogue that Tessarian always would speak about, of having that inner dialogue with yourself, your higher self or whatever. And people who wake up with that, like, that's the stuff all the philosophers have talked about, waking up with the inner dialogue. Don't do that again. Check yourself. Don't let that happen. And that's, you know, something big that's happened for me recently. I've had some people lash out at me, close friends, like, go on a religious tirade against me, even at this point in my life, you know. And I wanted to lash out. Like, I knew deep, juicy things. I knew background information that I could destroy these people and make videos and all kind of stuff. And a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of publicity that goes behind hip-hop beef or political beef or religious beef. There's a lot of people that gets a lot of clicks. You know, you want to see the videos of so-and-so going at somebody or whatever. So part of me wanted to do that, but I had to say, do not do it. I had to talk to myself, don't do it. Because I used to do that. Like, I was talking about that religious person that I used to be. I made those videos all the time. I'm really good at it. But what I've built and what's, like, taken off now is I've been taking the high road and more of the spiritual aspect. So it's like, no, like, you're going to let these people call you out of your character and cause you to stoop down to their level, give them publicity, let them know that you're thinking about them and you're addressing it and all of this kind of stuff. And I had to kind of have that sit down with myself and with God, essentially, and say, look, I'm just, don't even think about it. Just give it, keep doing what I'm doing. I'm affecting change and stuff like that. And I'm doing a really good job. And what I've built has been because I've taken the high road. It's not because I did not build this by the finger lashing and the pointing and stay away from me and calling names, which I wanted to do. And I had that come to Jesus moment because I almost did it. And I knew I probably would have lost a lot of supporters if I did that. I probably, like, you know, I would have totally switched it up. And I think those people would have won if I did that. But I kept my peace. I never said their name in public and took the high road. And that's that inner dialogue. You know, once you think you have it all figured out, you have to retake those tests over. You know what I'm saying? You have to reiterate it again, and you know, they deserve it. Like, those people deserve me to do that, but I didn't do it. And I think that, like you said, that inner dialogue is the win-win, you know?
Well, two things there is, one, I've been helping out the Legalized Cannabis Party in New Zealand here. Got like over 1% of the votes last election. And so thinking about it, how do they actually engage in politics that's different? Because whenever you're at a submissions or anything like that, or a political speaking tour, when somebody says, and such from the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party, everybody's like all of a sudden brighter and hopeful and kind of like, this is going to be fun, that kind of thing. And I think it is because cannabis activists do take the high road. Not to put too fine a point on it, because Because they're often talking about something positive. They're usually high anyway, which makes them a lot less aggressive, a lot more relaxed, and a lot more humorous. And I think that's what cannabis often brings out in people. But the second point here is about achieving that sense of in a dialogue, etc., or enlightenment. The old saying is that before enlightenment, you must carry water and you must chop wood. After enlightenment, you must carry water and you must chop wood. Nothing actually changes just because you learned something or got smarter or whatever. It's all about the application in your own life and how you do things, and the reasons why you do things change. But what you're doing and how you're doing it doesn't really change at all. Okay, that's kind of why people are gotten into this. It's not so much of a rabbit hole as it is a spider's web that they get stuck on, of consuming useless knowledge that you do not ever use is by definition useless. How do you know if a piece of knowledge is useful? By using it and then figuring it out. Does this work? Hey, this guy says you don't need to eat and you could just stare at the sun. Oh yeah, you tried it?
Yeah, breatharian. Yeah.
And then it turns out that one of the old guys who was responsible for that allegedly was just sneaking food when people weren't looking. So we often follow things that we don't follow through. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep. That's the point that I think it all makes sense now. Like all this, like how much studying of religious text or ancient esoteric knowledge do you need? And you're at the point that like I had a dude hit me up, and you know, you get a lot of fanatics, you get a lot of weird people. You know, if you're a public figure or whatever, you have to decipher through those messages. And a dude hit me up. He's like, "Hey, exactly, man." And there's like, "Hey, I sent Jordan Maxwell this 4 terabyte hard drive full of documentaries and full of esoteric knowledge and stuff, and I want to send you one too, bro. I really believe in what you're doing. I seen your interview with Jordan Maxwell. Let me send it to you." And I'm like, there may have been a time where I'm like, okay, send it. Like now, I don't know what's on it, you know what I'm saying? But now I'm at the point I'm like, I don't care about like that. I've been there and done that. Not that that's bad if you're there, but for me, like I said earlier, like I'm trying to make practical all of this stuff I've studied over the years and see how it fits and how I can apply it to my life and it be useful knowledge of something that makes sense, you know what I'm saying? And I love the esoteric knowledge and stuff like that, because it is for me it's the science of the spirituality. It's even the religious, how a lot of that stuff is kind of mixed in there. There's a lot of spirituality mixed within, you know, the religious holy books and the scriptures and stuff, and all of that kind of comes into play when you study spirituality in your spiritual practice, about the music that you listen to, the food you eat, the company you keep. Like all of these things are practical, and this is like the science of it behind the spirituality. That's why I'm really in love with it. But I'm at the point that's like, we have to take the next step. You know, we have to do something with what we've already learned, versus like always studying and never coming to some type of place where you're ready to step out and be effective. Like I know the people who are still there. They're just in libraries now. They're just in their personal studies and studying in their languages, Greek, Hebrew, and they just that's all they do. There is no social life. There is no impact on the lives of people around you. And that's there's the preaching to the choir and rolling knowledge off of each other and talking to the same people that believe the same type of deals. But I really believe in relationship and making this stuff practical, man.
Yeah, and it's kind of difficult for people to actually jump that shark, really, because it clues them into the fact that the vast majority of your conspiracy knowledge, ladies and gentlemen, is something you will never actually find a practical use for, ever. Does your knowledge of the moon landing, is that going to help you? Are you planning to land on the moon? does your knowledge of assassination, is that going to stop the next one? You know, that kind of thing. if you can look at your own life, on the other hand, there's another thing. I hate to keep bringing up Jordan Peterson, but you should probably be watching his stuff as well, folks.
I like Jordan Peterson.
It says clean your own room, right? So once you've got a clean room, then you can go out and you can tell other people how to do stuff like that. But if you ain't clean, you know, and it's just talking about your entire life, everything that surrounds you, imagine you're living in a bubble and the only thing that pierces that bubble is the thing that you actually touch. Okay, are you barefoot on a carpet right now, making fists with your toes in the diehard sense of the word? Or are you wearing your shoes and your socks and stuff like that that are made from some kind of polyester, which is actually a oil derivative that causes cancer upon repeated contact with the skin? You know, these kind of things. What are you wearing? What are you drinking? What are you eating? What are you watching? What are you listening to? What are you smelling? Who are you feeling? Are you hugging people enough? You know, you're supposed to have about 15 hugs a day in order to maintain optimum oxytocin levels in your brain. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You know, these interesting things. Hey, that's why whenever I approach somebody who I know or whatever, I always give them a hug, you know. I might not get another one. You know, and what it means is, folks, that you've got to be in the 3D zone. All right. There's a lot of things to be said about the metaphysical, but however, if you are capable of navigating within the physical universe, it's going to make your metaphysical trip a hell of a lot easier. For example, if you understand physics and you take acid, are you going to be one of the idiots who jumps off a freaking skyscraper thinking he can fly? No, you try to take off from the ground first.
Hey, funny thing is synchronicity, because I was thinking about that same analogy today. The same as, I don't know why, but I was thinking of that analogy today.
And it was one that Bill Hicks made. In fact. And when you were talking before about radio influences, like the George Norris and so on and so forth, what was interesting for me is that I didn't actually have any real talk radio influences. I only really had comedians. Comedians was who I talked, was who I learned talk from. And I think it was in sales, actually, telesales, calling people up while they're in the middle of having dinner, and you have to get their attention and their trust within 30 seconds. That's what taught me to communicate. One taught me how to talk, the other taught me how to communicate. And those were just, you know, the practical skills. And ergo, I can take this thing, which ordinarily would be useless, just the power of speech. You can take an amplification device like a microphone and a image capturing device like a lens, and you can amplify these things that you are, that you say, that you do. Now, that's just my voice. That's just my image. What else is there to me that can be done, that can be amplified, that can be built upon? A lot of people are very afraid to even take that first step, you know? Afraid to take that first step because they've been so used to seeing other people who have already got it down and are already doing it and things like that, they didn't realize what they had to go through to get there.
Yeah.
Watching background DVD commentaries, for example, is a remarkably interesting way to look into the filmmaking process and how much actual hard work and not fun a lot of it actually is. It's a pain in the ass. It's stressful. A lot of filmmakers get depressed for years. Some of them don't even make another film after a bad film experience, that kind of thing. And that's the struggle everybody has to go through whenever they're making their art form, because essentially you're navigating the three-dimensional universe. You're attempting to take fifth-dimensional consciousness, which is consciousness beyond time and space, and you're trying to will it out of your thought processes into the physical reality, because only once you do that can it affect anybody else. You've made an album coming out on Friday. Didn't come from nothing. All right? It was nothing to begin with, but it got channeled into something physical or something digital, which is still something that's capable of affecting the three-dimensional world. That is essentially the entire mechanism for our existence. What's fifth dimensional? Make it three dimensional. Start affecting the real world. It'll start affecting the fifth dimensional consciousness of everybody, and then they'll start bringing new stuff into the three dimensional world. Okay.
Yeah.
That's inspiration, you know?
And that's, I think we've been talking about this a lot lately too, is that like, is if you believe in a God or a creator, like that's the highest form of worship. You know what I'm saying? When if your God is a creator and he created you and you're created in that same image, and then you return the favor and you're a creator as well. So when you create something and breathe life into it, something that you pulled out of the ether, something you pulled out of the fifth dimension that did not exist, would have never existed unless you went in, got it, brought it out, and then presented it to the world, and then it brings forth change, positivity, inspiration, inspiring other people to create, you know, all of these things. If he could do it, I can do it. Podcast, video show. Hey, if he can do a video show, I could do one. You know, these type of things. That I believe that that's like one of the highest forms of worship or honor back to the divine, that if we're created in the image and likeness. And we've just been kind of blown on just exploring that lately, and the power of creativity and how we have this inner essence to create something. And it, for me, I get there's a weird pleasure that I get, a real sense of accomplishment. It doesn't matter what it is, whether I write a song, do a music video, do a painting, whatever, creating anything. And it's usually for me, it's something that's beautiful, something that can encourage people or something, do it, because people can use that same energy or that same force for the dark side and create something that's going to tear people down. We can easily make videos that are exposing people and calling people names and calling them out of their names and out of their character, and do things that expose people. And but there's so much gratitude or gratification in doing something that encourages people, man, and makes their journey, it makes their trip or experience here on earth a little bit easier, a little bit more tolerable, man.
Yeah, well, it comes down to the value of the individual over the collective, but it also comes down to realizing how valueless an individual can be if they don't realize their own value, right? Like, if you think of a tree, you can touch a tree, it exists. If you think of a forest, you can't touch a forest, it doesn't actually really exist. It exists as a mental construct. Oh, there's many trees, we call that a forest, but it's actually just lots of individual trees. And that's the same thing with mankind, is that we have trumped our... Oh, my God, I don't even like using that phrase anymore.
Don't use that exactly.
Damn it! Why did that...
Someone coming from a comedic background, you should have a certain appreciation for Trump.
Well, I have no actual real comedic background, per se. I've just got a funny accent. Now, the other thing about it is, though, we talk about how our experiences trump our beliefs. So if you have an experience you ever hear people say this, oh, I can't believe that happened to me. but it just happened to you. How come you can't believe it?
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's because people are trying to struggle with reality rather than accepting it. And, you know, that's good in some ways. Like, for example, the reality is right now, ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery banker pedophiles hating the scum run the earth. Okay? That's the reality. But just because that's the reality doesn't mean that's the way it always has to be. I got busted by cops, developed complex post-traumatic stress disorder, and now can't work for businesses and can't work for government. So I'm doing my own radio show on a network that lets me say whatever I want, right? That's the kind of thing. These bad things that have happened to me have channeled me into a certain mission, as it were. And if you don't have a mission, ladies and gentlemen, it's kind of like not being on a watch list. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Tom Morello said, you're not doing the will of God if you don't have a rap sheet. Tom Morello from
Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, I believe that.
It's a funny thing how successful people often think very similarly, And we were looking at the difference between left brain people and right brain people in terms of their brain being a political ideology. So you're a lefty or you're a righty and that kind of thing. And conservatives are really, really concerned with loyalty. All right, very, very concerned with loyalty and tradition. And libertarians, on the other hand, are interested in change and making a difference, that kind of thing. And this is why these two ideologies exist. They exist for a reason. One helps it to change, and one stops it going out of control. but what's problematic is that people who are completely psychopathic have corrupted both parties, so they're both completely out of control and they support each other, all right? And that only goes upwards. It doesn't go left or right. It only goes in one direction. So when I see in 2008 Obama campaigning on a platform of change and John Key campaigning on a platform of change, the New Zealand Prime Minister or whatever, I saw a connection. Right? That they're only recycling these same BS, meaningless little tripe arguments in order to get you to keep supporting the system. Tacit support for the system. And I think there was this guy named Mario, he gave this great speech in the 1960s about the machine and how the running of the machine becomes so odious that you can't even passively participate. And you have to start throwing your body upon the levers and upon the wheels, and you've got to make it stop. That kind of passion, that kind of self-sacrifice is something that people need to essentially look inside themselves and say, it's there, but you're not going to find it if you don't feel pain. You're not going to find it if you don't suffer. You're going to have to put yourself through something you aren't going to enjoy pretty much, and get that delayed gratification. You can't have everything now. You have to have it when it's the right time, when you've paid the price for it. And people don't want to earn what they've got. That's why they're jealous of a whole bunch of people who have a lot that they don't, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. People want what you have, but they don't want to do the work, you know? And they get jealous of a platform, you know, larger than theirs, and all that kind of stuff. And I've dealt with that, and like I said, even from close friends, even of recently. But we got to understand, like, we're going to continue to deal with that. Like, that I don't think that goes away. I don't think that you reach a level like, I'm finally past it where people don't want what I have. There's people who will snub you out in a heartbeat to take everything you have, you know, if you let them. And they have methods of manipulation to make you feel bad for them or want to, you know, all kinds of things, man. And so you always have to kind of be ready. You always kind of have to be on your toes and know that what you're pursuing, no matter what it is of your dream, that it's worth sacrifice, that it's worth going, you know, swimming upstream, going against the grain, and doing things that seem unconventional to most, especially if you're getting good results from it. You know, you don't have to like worry about the approval of others to, you know what I'm saying, validate you in what you're doing and your vision and your mission that you're creating. At the end of the day, it's going to be you. When the lights cut off and you lay your head upon your pillow, it's only you and God. These people who they come against you, they talk against you, they belittle you, all of these things, don't let that stuff get to you, man, because like it can mess with you, man. It can discourage you, cause you to move into depression. That's why I think you have to know that you know that what you want to do, that vision that you have. I guess going back to the beginning of the show, kind of what we talked about is like these the vision that you have for yourself, that you can make it happen, you can create whatever you want using spirituality, using YouTube videos of DIY, you know what I'm saying? There's so many different ways to do that, and we all have the same 24 hours in the day. Like, we all have the same allotted time to play with and waste or plant something in the ground or water something or dig up that stony ground that's there so that we can plant something. But those laws of seed time and harvest and cultivation and stuff, they exist for all of us, man. And I just like to encourage people out there to whatever they want to do, whatever they want to build, that you can do it. Create it, speak it into existence. Watch people who are doing it successfully. Learn from them. If there's something that they're doing that's not working, learn not to do that. You know what I'm saying? If that's they do something that turns everybody off, or you know, play and it's, you know, whatever's brash, whatever is not working, don't do it, and just learn. And if you have a bunch of people, like we're talking about, the George Norris, the whoever the guys are, who you're listening to, podcasters, YouTubers, and it's working, do what they're doing. Try it. Just try a little bit. Put it all together. Mesh it together and see what comes out. Throw it up at the wall, see what sticks. Hang on to the good, spit out the bad. And hard work pays off. I've come a long way. I know you have too. And what we're doing is working. So it's beautiful, man.
Yeah. Well, one can only hope. Because you see sometimes that, and you mentioned the word depression there, and I've been feeling that bad like the last couple of months. I mean, I haven't done a show in like nearly 6 months on American Freedom Radio, maybe even longer, because I was just feeling so down and needing to recharge and things like that. But you know, now I'm back, I'm feeling better, and I'm being productive and that kind of thing. So I often find that the old adage that what goes up must come down also has a vice versa to that. Just because you're down doesn't mean you ain't going to go back up again. And what was the old, there's another old saying as well, if you only believe in the sun when you can see it, you'll never make it through the night.
That's good.
Bye bye everybody.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our stringent quality controls and absolute zero GMOs plus testing for heavy metals makes us unique in the storable foods market. Our line of fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Take out the amount you need and reseal the package for use within the next 6 months. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's www.simplycleanfoods.net today.
American Survival Wholesale is a proud sponsor of the American Freedom Radio. And when you purchase quality products from AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, you help support this program. Our quality non-GMO foods do not contain MSG, high fructose corn syrup, or heavy metals. At American Survival Wholesale, you can choose from over 8,000 quality products, including self-defense weapons, bug-out bags, and long-term storable food at wholesale prices. We also have custom food packs available, including gluten-free, dairy-free, and vegetarian packs. If we don't have it, you don't need it. American Survival Wholesale is a veteran-owned and operated company which also supports our veterans in need, and we are very active in disaster relief. If you would like to become a distributor, please email us at bugoutamerica@usa.com or call 818-720-0759. We offer free consultations to answer all your questions. Do it today while things are calm. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com.
And when we're not invading some sovereign nation or setting it on fire from the air, which is more fun for our Nintendo pilot, then we're usually declaring war on something here at home. Did you ever notice that about us? We love to declare war on things here in America. Anything we don't like about ourselves, we declare war on it. We don't do anything about it. We just declare war on it. It's the only metaphor we have in our public discourse for solving problems, declaring war. We have to declare a war on everything. We have a war on crime, the war on poverty, the war on litter, the war on cancer, the war on drugs. But you ever notice we got no war on homelessness? Huh? No war on homelessness. You know why? There's no money in that problem. No money to be made off of the homeless. If you could find a solution, if you could find a solution to homelessness where the corporate swine and the politicians could steal a couple of million dollars each, you'd see the streets of America begin to clear up pretty quick. I'll guarantee you that. I will guarantee you that.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
Launch sequence initiated.
We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good.
Ready to
move the
old out. Go 5,
Roger,
copy.
3, 2, 1,
engage.
Prepare your mind to experience American Freedom Radio.